This is Doug Clark Jr. podcasting from Louisville, Kentucky, recording episode 5 of Working Class Spark on December 1st, 2018. Welcome to the 5th episode of Working Class Spark, where the news is for us, the workers, not them, the rich and powerful. Thank you for listening to this episode, and let me begin by describing to you what this podcast is. This podcast is for sparking the working class. It serves as an ignition for workers' power against the rich and powerful who have their foots on our throats. It serves as a spark for street politics and collective action. And through these methods, we must fight for our freedoms and rights as human beings. This podcast is a rallying cry for you, the worker, the worker's advocate, and the desperately unemployed to stand up to the rich because workers have been screwed by the system. This is what this podcast is all about. Here at Working Class Spark, I like to begin with what I call the terms of the week. There's some collective action, street politics, terms around that a lot of people have heard, but they just don't understand the exact definition of it. So I'd like to clear those up with the listeners. Now, it happens to be that our two terms of the week are both collective action and street politics. And it's funny because I put it in the intro without ever explaining what exactly they mean. So let me begin with collective action. It occurs when a number of people work together to achieve some common objective. Example, any form of political collective action would be when like-minded others would participate in some action to further their cause, like a demonstration, strike, occupation, rally, or spontaneous riot, etc. Now, street politics involves taking your form of collection action to the streets. It means you do not ask for permission or seek permits from the authorities, whether your workstation, whether leaving your workstation, or marching and blocking major railways, or forming a picket line where you let those scabs through. And street politics has existed as long as there have been streets where people could gather to discuss, protest, and sometimes violently demand rights. An example would be when the commoners during the French Revolution stormed the Bastille in Paris on July 14, 1789. Now let's get to the news of the week with our first article. It's about GM's job cuts that they announced earlier this week. They're going to shut down as many as 5 North American factories in a major restructuring. You got to love that term, major restructuring. Cut as many as 14,000 jobs in North America, around 3,300 blue-collar workers in the U.S. and another 2,600 in Canada. The rest are going to be white-collar jobs. Even though unemployment is low, the economy is growing, and U.S. auto sales are near historic highs, they're still conducting these cuts and closures. And GM doesn't see any economic downturn in their future, yet they're still doing the, quote, major restructuring. U.S. automakers have enjoyed nearly a decade of prosperity since the government bailouts of GM in 2009. We bailed them out, now they're cutting us out. But the automaker has come under pressure from investors to return more cash in the form of share buybacks and dividends. And GM shares rose as 7.8% following the announcement. So I think this proves to everybody that big faceless corporations like GM, Walmart, Amazon, etc., do not care about you. They care about major stockholders in New York. That's why they're cutting people even though things are good. And 7-8% rise in the stock price is what happened after the release of the news of the job cuts in March. The United Auto Workers Union has already condemned GM's actions and threatened to fight them through every legal, contractual, and collective bargaining avenue open to our membership. There's a beacon of hope. We don't have a handout here. We just want work, said UAW Local 1112 President Dave Green. I really hope that that does work out, but I have a feeling that GM's just too powerful in the courts for that to really work out. It's just really a sad thing. Bobby Marsh, a 41-year-old single mother who has worked assembling the Chevrolet Cruze compact car since 2008, says, "I can't believe our president would allow this to happen," she said Monday. "I've lived in this community my whole life. I bought the home my father and grandfather built. I don't want to move." Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown said GM received record tax breaks as a result of the GOP's tax bill last year and has eliminated jobs instead of using that tax windfall to invest in American workers, he said in his statement. I could do a whole episode just on what a sham those tax windfalls are. In quote, "You can't place all the blame on Donald Trump. I don't know why, but he individually raised the stakes because he promised workers he was the only one who could save the manufacturing base, said David Cohen, a political science professor at the University of Akron. This is unbelievably sad news. I mean, I'm sure these people bought into the whole idea that they're working on a team, GM, values them as a team member, like they do at other places like Walmart and Amazon. But they don't care about you. They care about stock prices and the major stockholders in New York on Wall Street. And I feel so sorry for these people because, they're losing everything. Without those jobs, those are probably industry jobs where you live around the factory, and there's communities are just going to be destroyed. The second article we have here is a new series from The Guardian, the leftist British newspaper, entitled Amazon Diaries. I'm really excited about this one. Excited it's going to be in print, not about the subject matter. It's where an anonymous insider takes us behind the scenes at an Amazon fulfillment center where workers are an extension of the machine. First part was published on November 21st, Wednesday, 2018. Welcome, Amazonians. It is always day one. Are you ready to make a difference? It was my first day as a seasonal Amazon worker, hired just prior to peak season. Our site operations manager was like many Amazon managers, an ex-military white manager in his late 40s and wearing straight-fit jeans and a t-shirt with Amazon military emblazoned on the front. He drew a line alongside an inverted pyramid, writing least important on the bottom and most important higher up, with the word customer scrawled along the very top. Where do you think Jeff Bezos sees himself on this chart? Silence. He points to the bottom of the pyramid. Jeff sees himself as the least important person in the company. What this company cares about is the customer promise and putting ourselves first. Where do you think our associates are? Silence. Here, Jeff Bezos is at the very top. Jeff sees you at the very top. You, the associates, are the closest to the customers. It is up to you every day to uphold our customer promise. As frontline associates, you are the most important part of this company, which is true. Jeff Bezos sits around and does nothing, makes big executive decisions, but he rakes in all the billions while me and you do all the work. Back to the article. As I headed to our training session, where my new orange associate work vest and wearing my white badge designating me as a seasonal employee, I was approached by a coworker in a fancy blue and green lined ambassador vest and a blue badge that signified him as being converted to a non-seasonal Amazon worker. Did they give you the pyramid crap? I nodded. That's a load of shit. We laughed, but I wasn't quite sure I understood. Welcome to Amazon, he said. The inverted pyramid has stuck with me as a Amazon fulfillment associate. In some ways, it's on point. It's important to take a step back and realize what an Amazon fulfillment center really is. Prior to Amazon, the sale of stuff largely took place through physical stores. Enter a store and there can be dozens of employees, stocking shelves, managing the checkout counter, controlling inventory. The pace and rhythm of the day, at least compared to fulfillment centers, can be relatively relaxed. At Amazon, by contrast, we are not retail workers, we are factory workers. A single fulfillment center can contain 1,500 to 2,000 full-time workers stowing, picking, packing, unloading, sorting, palletizing, and delivering hundreds of thousands of items every day. Centers are filled with the whirl, grind, and moan of conveyor belts, the incessant drones of a forest of kilobots moving shelves. We work hard and diligently to make Amazon run. While our collective efforts produce astounding results, we are supervised every day more intensively. Through the use of digital trackers and indicators, our workday is managed down to the second, with each task timed based on a rate set by managers who push us even faster. Work is often organized to keep workers from talking or even taking breaks, with this time considered off task. The factory workers on the assembly line, we are essentially extensions of the machine. When you recognize that we are what keeps Amazon going and the most important part of the business, putting us at the top of the pyramid is right. Workers, whether the engineers or the hundreds of thousands of warehouse employees, are the backbone of the business and the source of astounding wealth. Without us, there is no Amazon Prime, no advertising revenue, no streaming video, no HQ2. However, the pyramid analogy is also fitting because at the time, this place feels like a pyramid scheme. After a few months at the company, it becomes clear to most of us that management doesn't regard us as a crucial contributions to its success. In reality, they treat us like disposable parts, just like the people who lost their jobs or will be losing their jobs at GM that we covered in the first article. Usually management comes to you when you first start or during meetings and says, this is a team atmosphere. We're all working for, say, Amazon or Walmart, but it's, it couldn't run without you. And that's true, but you don't make the profits. The owners do, or the stock shareholders do. It doesn't take long before you've seen blown backs, boxes falling on people's heads, carpal tunnel into your co-workers' wrists, and balky knees that never get better. You've seen workers' compensation claims repeatedly denied, and efforts to address safety issues given low priority. You've seen sexism, racism, and ageism in a promotion culture tainted with favoritism. You've seen write-ups unfairly distributed and used to manipulate workers. You've seen an emotionally toxic culture where the stress of meeting productivity targets leads managers to treat workers like things, to be pushed harder and faster without regard for the emotional or personal cost. You've arrived home exhausted, too worn out to spend time with your kids or friends, and you've noticed that the wealth we produce is being accumulated by our boss, the modern world's richest man. While our wages barely keep us afloat, the point that I made earlier, Amazon's much-touted new minimum wage of $15 an hour is not enough to propel hundreds of thousands of us into the middle class. Those of us at the bottom of the pyramid put our bodies and lives on the line, but those at the top of the pyramid are hung out to dry. The closer you are to doing the work of making this company trip run, the more your self-respect is attacked. Every other week, this column will seek to understand the complexity of life inside Amazon and explore the effects Amazon has on our lives and on our broader community. Throughout, I want to maintain consistent on one thing. Amazon workers deserve respect. As people who make this company run, we are unique. And only if we are united will we be able to transform our company and communities into the ones we want. So treating Amazon Fulfillment Centers as a factory, it's exactly what it is. It's no different than the GM factories that the employees during the first article work at. First of all, you're not seen as a person. You're seen as an extension of the machine, as it says in the article. And they'll cut you at any time because they don't care about you. They care about stock prices. And also, they want to push you faster and faster like they would a machine. They might upgrade a machine so it goes faster. You can't upgrade a human so you faster go pressure them to go faster, and that just is too much emotional and psychological cost, or physical cost too, for the workers to keep up. The Amazon Diaries will appear every 2 weeks, so I'll make sure to get it together for us every 2 weeks. The writer has chosen to remain anonymous over concerns about retaliation, which he's very smart to do. Now here at the part of the show, I'll be going over the proposal here that I make in every episode. So in closing, if you haven't got a sense of what is needed more than anything else to hear produce a good podcast, it is that I need you to contribute. I need you to send me clippings of articles that you think would lend to the working class movement. I need book reviews and recommendations. I need to know the best working class freedom movements on the web. I need to be made aware of what is going on in your community toward helping the working class battle the parasitic rich. I need you to email me what you're thinking on your opinions regarding the show and the struggle. I need you to tell me, in general, what you, the listener, want out of this podcast. For this podcast to work, I need this to be a collective project amongst us, listeners, working class members, and advocates among us. I would also like to respond to some of your emails and share them with our fellow listeners. And if you have the Anchor app on your iPhone or Android, through the Anchor app, you can actually leave a voice message that I would be able to play on the next podcast. Also, I'd like to put together a segment with interviews. I've been talking about getting some interviews with some labor leaders here in Louisville. I have a lot of connections, but at the same time, I'm having a technology problem at the moment where I'm trying to find the best form of equipment to actually record in an interview. I can interview leaders, professional lecturers, and fellow workers who fight for the freedom of the working class. I would be interested in interviewing some of you, the listeners, who have something to say that I think would fit the podcast purpose. Thank you for listening to episode 5 of Working Class Spark, and I hope you subscribe. I'll be conducting each episode on the Saturday of each week from here on out. We may feature the occasional special episode. Depends what's happening in the world. You can now also find the show on all the major podcasting hosting sites across the web. If it's easier to find our podcast somewhere else other than through Anchor FM or the Anchor app, you can just search for Working Class Spark over at Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, Breaker, CastBox, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, or Stitcher. You can also like our Facebook over at Working Class Spark and hit the email button to reach us at our email email account over at workingclassspark1@gmail.com. But the only way to contact us and leave a voicemail message will be through the Anchor app. I look forward to getting your responses. Thank you, and let's keep sparking the working class.